kwakuwamfamnako nauvuku naulukufu atamilele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, the companion podcast to our website, jamboeveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting, as always, from the Radio Harambe studios. And joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who has just added Puerto Rico to his travel plans, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you today?
Dave, I'm well. I'm coming from a Lahui Kalil National Park.
If it's not Hawaii, I'm going home.
It's not Hawaii.
All right, let me take another guess. Fiji.
No, you're not even close.
Oh, come on. I'm not even in the right ocean?
You are not in the right ocean.
Oh, forget it. What is it?
Argentina.
What's it called again?
Lihue, L-I-H-U-E, Kalil, C-A-L-E-L, National Park.
Well, I'm going to blame that on you. You pronounced it like it was a Polynesian word.
But we're here studying the pink fairy armadillo. That's really the name of a creature.
I've never heard that before in my life.
It is the smallest armadillo. And
really?
And like other armadillos, the top of it has that kind of armor look, which is a pinkish hue, hence the name. But the rest of it has this white, silky fur. It is, like I said, the smallest of the armadillo. Its feet are so big and powerful that it has a hard time walking on land. It spends almost all of its time underground. And because of that, they don't even know if it's endangered or not. So we're trying to figure that out. It's under the IUCN. It is listed as data deficient, which means they have no idea if it's threatened or endangered or just common. So that's what we're doing here.
That's amazing. I never heard that. I looked that one up.
They're cute little guys. You should check them out.
On today's show, we're going to discuss all the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. And then in our final segment, we are going to take you through the queue of Cali River Rapids. But let's start with the local news. And most of this news, Mike, this week is really just news bites. It's all just really closings and refurbs and openings and stuff like that. And we'll start with the Tusker House. Looks like from October 4th until December 24th, the Tusker House will extend their lunch hours, meaning essentially extending the character meals. During that time, lunch will be from 11 to 5. Yes, you can have lunch at 5. This will be... and also until 5:30, apparently, on nights when the park closes at 6. When the park is open later, and Mike defines that, I believe, as 7 and beyond in the article that wrote about this.
Right.
The normal dinner, which is a non-character dinner, still a buffet, will begin at 6:15 and go until the park is closing. I can't imagine there's going to be too many days where that will come into effect in this time frame, though.
Only towards the end when it gets real close to Christmas, then they keep the park open to like 8 o'clock or so.
And maybe Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and right around there, too. But it's just a step closer, I think, to making this a full-time character meal. I think that's the plan. And certainly once, you know, the parks open later and the Rivers of Light are, you know, going strong or whatnot, I have a feeling the Tusker House, and from what I keep hearing, the Tusker House eventually will be characters, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Constantly. Never close.
Yeah, right. I mean, the only reason that's not at dinner now is that there's not as many people in the park, and they just don't deem it worth it. But once they have a nighttime event and more people around later on at night, I think they'll go to a full-time character meal.
Yeah, and that's not too far away.
Right. So. And the dinner, you know, the food at dinner is virtually the same as at lunch. So there's no real difference except you don't have the characters.
Right. I mean, maybe, perhaps, when they have a full, you know, dinner and a full allotment of guests there, they may actually change that up a little bit, I'm hoping.
Maybe.
They expand the menu out a little bit. But we shall see. Speaking of extensive refurbs, it looks like the one for It's Tough to Be a Bug is finally ended, and it appears the attraction is reopened. Part of the sort of part of the result of this refurb was that they also did work on the Tree of Life. There's netting all around the Tree of Life, stopping potential falling limbs and gigantic limbs and and huge leaves. Apparently, these nettings have, for the most part, been removed. I guess there's still some.
There are some, yeah.
Yeah, but the tree is getting closer and closer to being where they want it to be at this point. Mm-hmm. So that's always good news.
Yep, and it doesn't look like much changed it with Tough to Be a Bug. I've heard of no changes at all to the show. Were
yeah, we were waiting to hear if there was any kind of any change whatsoever. I guess it's just improvements. Even people who I've talked to who have gone to it have said that they've noticed nothing other than how could you really notice what might be in the audio animatronic? Maybe they cleaned up the film a bit, but nothing so much where people were blown away by some great change.
Right.
Speaking of more and more refurbs, let's go to things that will be closing at the park. We know now that Cali River Rapids is closed for its yearly maintenance. They always manage to do this one quickly. It's going to be down from January 20th to February 4th. Which is only a couple of weeks, but it does this every year, so this is of no surprise. Just like Splash Mountain does this, all the outdoor the water parks or all the outdoor water stuff essentially goes down at some point in the winter, usually at least. And speaking of water being closed, I always struggle with how you say this. The Uwanja camp. It's the water play area in Kidani Village. That's actually going to be closed for quite some time. That's going to be closed for 3 months. I believe it's closed now and is not going to open until right around Christmas Eve. So that's getting a long refurb. I wonder if there was any problems associated with that, if they were having any issues with it, because that seems to be much more than just paint and and touch up on a water ride. That seems like there's mechanical stuff going in there. But needless to say, it'll be closed on the 24th.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any significant issues with it, but who knows?
It's got to be something. They haven't announced any changes to it. There's no reason to change it. So it's got to be something like that. Speaking of closures, we also found out today, I think this was via WDW Magic, that the affection section at Rafiki's Planet Watch is closing. And this is, Mike, just the area where you pet the animals.
Right, everything else is open. They got to refurb the goats.
Right. Well, you beat me to my question. It's closed from October 7th to November 11th. Does it take that long to groom a goat?
There's really not much there. There's a couple of little...
grass there. It's dirt, for God's sake.
Dirt, there's fencing, and there's, the wash your hand station.
What could possibly take so long?
Overhangs? I have no idea.
It's such a weird, such a weird story.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, we just learned about that today, and I haven't actually been given any official on that, but I'm sure it is. I mean, they usually don't report these things without getting some sort of notification. I just haven't gotten it myself yet. So they'll be closed probably by the time you listen to this, or maybe only a couple days later and through November. Finally, this is a little Joe Rohde news. I think we talked quite a bit last year about Joe Rohde going to Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
He went there as part of a project he was doing where he was sort of painting the landscape, painting sort of cultural artifacts and things like that as well. And he was there to raise money specifically for the critically endangered snow leopard. Well, there's been a documentary that was made during that time, and it's called Leopard in the Land. It played once, or is due to play this weekend, I believe. So by the time you hear this, it will have already played.
Yep.
Yeah, in California. And now it looks like what we're reporting is that it's going to be playing sometime in late March in Washington, D.C. I have personally queried Mr. Rohde about when we would be able to see this. And so far, this is it. Mm-hmm. So the film is only a very, very limited release and probably just for festivals. I'm hoping at some point in time it'll at least be available online. Mm-hmm. But there's no word on that just yet, as far as I know.
No word yet. And it's going to be playing, it looks like, either March 27th or 28th or both, perhaps. at the Environmental Film Festival in Washington, D.C., which runs, and there's a website, so you know, feel free to Google it, but it looks like it's about a two-week event. No word yet on what time and what theater. You know, it's at different theaters throughout the city. You know, they show different films.
Right.
So as we get more word, we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll pass it along.
Yeah, it'll be quite some time, I would imagine, before the logistics like that come out on these kind of festivals. So, stick around. It's not until March, so we got some time to go.
Yeah.
I will say this. I remember a few documentaries that Joe Rohde was a part of. There was one, and the name is escaping me, that was done about his trip to Nepal, into the Himalayas, essentially, for the development of Expedition Everest. It was called, like, Journey into the Forbidden Land or something like that. I forget what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And I wish it would still, I wish it was still available, and it's not. And I've been searching for it like crazy. I had it on a videotape somewhere in the world. I probably still have it if I look hard enough. But he's a good guy. He's a good subject for that kind of thing, because he's funny and he's so enthusiastic.
Yeah.
You know, he really enjoys his subject. So looking forward to that. That's it for the local news. We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to turn it over to Safari Mike for the world news. Coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to JomboEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news. And with that, Safari Mike. Mike, what is in the world news this week?
Well, Dave, first we're going to go to Liberty Square and to Canada. But first, we're going to start off with a game that has captured American audiences as well as apparently Norwegian audiences. And that is, Dave, guess how much it costs. Ready?
Okay. We have full disclosure on this one. I have not only do I not know the cost here, I have no idea that Mike's even going to say. I have been out of cell service for a matter of days. Mike has prepped only almost this entire show, so I have no idea what he's talking about. So go ahead.
So if the show sucks, you can blame me. But anyway, Dave, as you recall, during the summer there was a Frozen Summer Fun event at the Hollywood Studios, and there was a premium package for that. Okay. Well, now that some of that's gone, Disney has now come up with a Frozen Holiday Premium Package.
Of course.
At Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Shocking.
Here's what you get.
Okay.
You get reserved seating at the sing-along at the theater over by Osborne Family Lights.
This is the thing you went to?
Yep.
Okay.
That was there during the summer, and it's sticking around for the long haul.
Okay. Can I ask, before we begin,
sure,
I want to ask these questions as we go along.
Sure.
Is it difficult to get into the sing-along?
I didn't have a problem.
Okay.
There are plenty of... Now, having said that, I sat in the back. They're now doing Fast Pass Pluses for it as well, so I'm not sure if that's making it more difficult to get in. And I also don't know where the seating is. I can only assume it's up front.
But you can Fast Pass Plus it and get in easy enough.
Yes.
Okay.
At the Osborne Family Lights, you will be at a dessert party. No booze, from what I can tell. And it's from 7 to 8:30 at night. You can enjoy the Osborne Family Lights in a nice little area and have a dessert party. You are also given a holiday lithograph and a special Frozen character pin.
Ooh.
Guess how much that costs.
Okay. $50 for the food. Because they always overcharge. I'm just thinking. I'm thinking aloud. The seats at the theater is worthless, but they'll think that's worth $20. $100.
$89.
That's the first time I overshot, Mike.
Four adults, $59 for children.
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking it was really worth about $75, but that it says frozen, so they can charge an extra $25. That's why I went with $100.
And it's not really all that frozen. All it is you get reserved seatings for the frozen sing-along. Everything else has nothing to do with frozen.
But they called it frozen something.
They did. Frozen holiday package.
So they think that that's going to get them an extra $25 because it says frozen. So go on. That's only a ludicrously expensive package. It's not a absolutely ridiculously expensive package. It's only minorly horrible.
it's not laughable.
It's chuckleable. Now, come on, $89 for dessert. I mean, all you're really coming home with, Mike, is a dessert, a $5 pin, and a $7 lithograph.
That's true.
And you're paying $89. I mean, you're paying three times what it's really worth. Let's be honest.
Right.
I mean, you're not getting any drinks. You're not getting any significant food. How much dessert are people going to eat? You're only there for an hour and a half. I mean, $90 for such a thing is laughable, but whatever. You're not even getting a tour guide or anything, you know?
Nope.
There's no cost.
Nope.
I mean, that's kind of the stuff that you get from... That's the same deal, aside from the lithograph, that you would get to go on a tour of Animal Kingdom, which is $20 less, but you get an actual tour for 3 hours. This you're paying more money and getting nothing, except what you could see on your own. So, but that's the way we're going. Welcome to the Bob Iger era, folks. The Tom Staggs era. All right, so
speaking,
what's next?
Dave, yeah. Speaking of Bob Iger.
Oh, God. Oh, I thought you were going to say Staggs.
No.
Me and Tommy S. Are big friends.
Oh, I'm sure. After the last episode or the one before that. Mr. Iger, who was scheduled to leave the company in June of 2016, it has been announced that that has been expanded out to June 30, 2018, is when he will be leaving as CEO of the company.
You know,
go ahead.
What I was going to say is that makes a lot of sense to me, because clearly his current term, as you know, as far as the parks go, right? His current term is disappointing, to say the least. I mean, he's an overall underwhelming term. I mean, not
for the Florida parks.
For the Florida parks. I mean, not yes. And I think what he's, because there's so many plans in the work for the Florida parks, I just couldn't see him. I really couldn't see him stepping away until at least Avatar opened up, because he's hitching his wagon to Avatar here. This is his deal. Everybody's blaming him because everybody knows no Imagineer is going to want to do that. You know, this was his thing. So he's going to want to see that open. And I think he's going to want to start to see ground moving on Star Wars as well.
I'm sure some of it will be open by then, probably.
Yeah, and I think he's going to want to be able to be there when the Star Wars film hits.
Well, that's 2016, though. But yes.
Right. But true. I mean, he's expanding himself out so that he could finally take some high steps and leave a legacy behind as of his time as a Disney executive, head executive. That was my thinking all along. That number just seemed strangely early.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, from what I hear, he wants to get into politics, so I'm not sure how early it is. But anyway, that's true in terms of the Star Wars film.
Yeah.
You know, by then Shanghai Disneyland will be out. I mean, he gets a lot of grief from us Florida people, but to be fair to Mr. Iger, and I think he's been terrible for the Florida parks, to be honest.
Yeah.
Other aspects of the Disney company, movies in particular, he's been nothing but gold. I mean, he bought Lucasfilm, he bought Marvel, you know, he's bought Pixar. He's turned around the animation department. I mean, Frozen has been under his watch, as well as Tangled. You know, the Avengers has been under his watch, and Guardians of the Galaxy. So the movie division, I think, is significantly better with him. And he was a movie guy with him than before. You can make an argument that, you know, he had something to do with the California Adventure stuff. But, you know, when you turn to Florida parks, it's not positive.
I also, Mike, I, I don't think of it the same way that you do. I mean, what he did was, instead of coming up with his with Disney's own original fantastic content, is they bought somebody else's. I don't really consider that to be that applaudable. I mean, if you think about the two big CEOs before him, or you know, the two big leaders of the company, Walt and Michael Eisner, they created their own content. They created their own legends, right? They made, you know, for better or for worse, these parks that you see are Eisner's creation, Eisner's idea. You can think of the animation films that went under the Eisner's reign that are now the ones that everybody, you know, thinks of as the next golden age. That to me makes a great Disney executive. All he's done is spent hundreds of millions putting a strain on the stock, you know, on the cash flow of the company in general to purchase somebody else's good ideas. As far, I understand how people want to fold Star Wars and Marvel and all this into the. That's not Disney, guy. I mean, that's just not how I think about it. They're not Disney. They're Marvel and they're Star Wars that Disney happens to own and reap the benefit of.
That's
just my feeling on him, and that's why I consider him a failure, because he only really has, film-wise, one or two that he could really point at as any great success.
I mean, like Frozen?
Well, I guess if you consider Frozen to be a great success, I mean, sure, for 13-year-old girls or for 9-year-old girls, he's a great success. But that's it. I mean, there's no generational film, once in a generation film like The Lion King or something like that in his time. Even Toy Story, which was under Eisner's era, you know. I mean, there's a lot of credit given to something that I think really isn't the legacy of a Disney executive. That's all.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm shortchanging him.
That Captain America is, you know, not a Disney property.
No,
I mean, Stan Lee invented it. You know, actually, no, he didn't. It was even before them.
Yeah, I mean,
but by the same token, they've taken that property, and the way they've planned it, the way they've marketed it, the way they even, you know, put the right people in the right spot. They've really, I mean, they've done an excellent job of advancing the Marvel universe in terms of movies. I mean, the Avengers now is a household name when it wasn't 10 years ago.
Sure.
You know, Thor and Captain America or like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy even are household names when, you know, nobody even knew about them a year ago. So, and they've also revitalized, I think, the Star Wars franchise, although that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, but let's not jump the gun there.
No, that's true, but taking it out of George Lucas's hands is probably a good idea at this point.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That, absolutely, that's true. So I think you have to give Disney some credit for managing the Marvel property very, very well.
Sure, but that's different from creating Mickey Mouse, Mike.
But Iger's a movie guy, and that's what he was. And Tom Staggs is an investment banker, and that's what they do.
Sure. Eisner was also a movie guy, and Frank Wells was also a money guy. And they responded by creating new content that has endured. My only point is Iger has not done that. He has sort of recognized the inability of Disney to do that. To his credit, he recognized that we weren't creating anything great here, and went out and purchased great so that he could do it. I just don't see that as impressive as what the other two big executives, Walt and Eisner, did before him.
I don't disagree with that.
That's all. That's my only point. I don't want to get into an argument with people on Twitter about who made more money and this. That, I mean, that means nothing to me. That's not my point here at all. I'm just talking about his legacy of creativity, which is something that he sort of rewrote the way, you know, he's sort of like, what was Walt's son-in-law's name that was kind of in between Eisner and Walt? His name just came out of my head. Ron Miller. You know, Miller was a leader and a sort of a quiet leader.
Mm-hmm.
He had his issues. I'm not saying Iger hasn't done better or worse. I'm not qualifying that at all. It's just that Iger is not along the lines of that sort of dynamic, creative, driving personality that Eisner and Walt were. you know, for better or for worse. So, but I'm not surprised at all about this news, because this is exactly what I thought would happen. I'm surprised only 2018. I figured he'd wait until like 2020, considering how long it takes for them to build things in the parks. You know?
I suppose.
All right, so what's next?
Liberty Square, Dave. Memento Mori has opened. And that is the old Yankee Trader shop. It is now a complete haunted mansion store. And if you look at WDW Magic, they have a lot of the various photos of the store. It looks really cool. There's a lot of really nice, you know, souvenirs to get in terms of like shirts and
yeah, looks good.
Plateware. Yeah, it really looks, actually did a nice job. And apparently there's like a photo thing where you can like get a holographic, you know, photo of yourself. And there's also all sorts of like pictures and stuff that come to life and do little things here and there that, you know, sort of engage you in terms of, you know, being a haunted mansion store. They did a real nice job.
And you're a big Haunted Mansion fan. So this is a welcome addition.
Yeah, it looks good. I like it. It looks very, very good.
And what's it called again?
Memento, M-E-M-E-N-T-O, and then Mori, M-O-R-I.
And have there been examples on the Parks blog or on any official thing of what they've been selling?
A couple of months ago they had, you know, early.
Oh, so nothing show. Since it opened.
No, but if you go on WDW Magic, you'll see some additional stuff, such as like a Ghost Host T-shirt. There's a one about the... it looks like a couple of books too. For one on the Haunted Mansion, I'm not sure what that is. I'll have to check that out.
Really?
But yeah, it looks pretty good.
Cool. Good. I'm looking forward to it. I like that stuff. Okay, cool. What else we got?
Here's a strange one. We've always talking about, you know, getting a new pavilion into Epcot. Well, maybe we are.
Oh, I've heard this.
Banker, or I don't even know, some sort of investment people from Puerto Rico who have already have signed up, and there will be a Puerto Rico pavilion for the food and wine for the next few years. They're apparently trying to get together enough money to put in a Puerto Rico pavilion, a permanent presence at Epcot to add another. I mean, Puerto Rico is not even its own country, really. It's the United States territory, so I'm not sure how I feel about this. But, you know, I guess any addition such as this, it wouldn't be my first choice, but a Puerto Rico pavilion at Epcot, it might be okay.
I guess. I mean, it would be, you know, I remember there was old plans for, what, Costa Rica, I think?
Mm-hmm, correct.
You know, this one's out of left field. I mean, you know, I don't even know what to think. I mean, yeah, it's first of all, it's not its own country, so
how do you
square that circle?
Well, maybe they'll build it near the American Pavilion, and
maybe
they'll take the Spice Row tables. Maybe they'll build the in this way, and, you know, the American Pavilion have to send some money to Puerto Rico, but they don't have to pay taxes back. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, everybody always says we just want a new pavilion. I've never felt that way. I don't just want a new pavilion. I want a good one that fits. So it's very, very important for me that those things all go together. Without knowing anything about it, I mean, it's intriguing. And like I said, it's a left field rumor. I read this too. I mean, it's making the rounds. It's weird. I don't know where it's going to come from, you know, or where it's going to end. I mean, I don't know if this is really going to happen. I mean, you know, it's easy for the curmudgeon in us to say, well, we've been down this road before.
Yeah, I mean, we had,
you know, and you we know, have
concept art for a Russia pavilion not that long ago, and hot rumors that, you know, there was a article coming out of Brazil that Disney was talking to people about a Brazilian pavilion there. It was getting close. So, yeah, we have heard this before.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it goes on. There was the African one.
You know, Costa Rica, I mean, I'm talking about, well, you know, much more recent.
Yeah.
The Russia and the Brazil have probably been within the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, this has been happening quite a bit. So we shall see. We'll stay on top of that one, because that's intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, it'll probably be just like all the other pavilions, some stores, some food items, and, you know, maybe a rum bar or something like that. But yeah, that's fine.
I mean, Puerto Rico is certainly would make a good pavilion if they decide to do it.
It would also be a little bit different than everything else that's there, for sure.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but we'll see.
All right.
We've heard nothing about any kind of concept art or anything like that. It's just
no.
It's just at the at the stage of finances, really, more than anything
else. Right. There's some people from some corporations and whatnot from Puerto Rico that are apparently trying to muster up the money to go to Epcot and say, all right, here's, whatever, $100 million. We want to build a pavilion and, whatever.
It makes sense because if you think about people going to Florida, try and entice them to go to Puerto Rico, that actually would be money well spent in the long run. I mean, maybe not extremely well spent, but it would be as good as any kind of ad campaign you can do.
Right. So, I mean, you're much more likely to get people from that area to take a trip to Puerto Rico than, say, China.
Exactly. That was my point exactly.
Right. So. And if you go to Florida and you really love the Puerto Rico Pavilion, maybe you say to yourself, next time we go to Florida, let's add another week and we'll hit Puerto Rico first or something like that. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
It's relatively close, all things considered.
It works. Believe me. I went to Canada because of the old Canadian film. And I've been to Canada about 12 times since. So it does work.
And you saw no band that looked like Off Kilter.
We'll get into that later. What do you mean by look like?
I'm just teasing you.
I certainly saw a band that sounds like Off Kilter.
Yeah, well, you can find that in New Jersey.
Yes, you can. It's probably true. So all what else?
Another story. Actually, we got two more. This one we know for sure. The Backlot Tour is now bye-bye, and in bizarre fashion, too. The Disney announced the Backlot Tour is going, and like 4 days later, it was closed for good.
Yeah, that was weird.
There was no heads up. There was certainly no outcry of emotion to save the Backlot Tour like there was for Maelstrom.
Yeah, no, there wasn't.
But it is closed, and rumors has it that many of the other things right around there, such as the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie set, the Coke bottle food stand, the Studio Catering Company food place right by Honey, mm-hmm. I Shrunk the Kids, mm-hmm. and the High Octane refreshments, they all are being rumored to close, by the end of this month. Apparently, cast members can't get hours at those facilities after, October 11th or some such thing. So this could be a big area that's going down for refurb. And, recently Tom Staggs and John Lasseter and some other big wigs were spotted walking around that area with all sorts of papers and, folders and, who the heck knows what they had looking at. But it looks like I'm going to guess that this is going to be a major expansion of the Pixar area as opposed to anything Star Wars, because that just sort of makes sense there.
Mike, I don't want to get, well, maybe I do, too far into this, but maybe it's unavoidable.
Well,
is the day not coming where we have to no longer call this park Studios?
Yes.
I mean, is the day coming where we completely rebrand this park?
Yes, that's coming very soon.
Completely rename it. Okay.
According to Jim Hill, who, some believe some of his stuff and some not. The park's name will change to Disney's Hollywood Adventure.
To go along with the California Adventure theme. Okay.
I guess, and it makes sense, because now the theme is no longer, this is a working studio, we'll see how movies are made. The theme will be, this is where you go to live the movies, whether that's Pixar or Star Wars or, the Great Movie Ride or, I'm sure there'll still be some elements of, how we make movies. Like, I'm sure the animation building will stay there. At least for the short term, the two stunt shows on the other side of the park are going to remain. But for the most part, I think they're going to rebrand it to, this is where you live the movies, as opposed to this is how you make movies.
Well, that's really what has been the focus of it for the last 10 years, even though they're calling it Studios. I mean, that really was the focus the whole time. And now we're getting to the point where making films is, not done that way anymore. It's it's done on a computer screen. It's done, it's done digitally. So, we don't do all the things that we used to do in film. So, it's coming. I mean, who wants to go walk through a computer lab and watch guys, that it doesn't lend itself to the same kind of thing that the old studio idea had.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's going to happen, and that's probably appropriate. So
right, and the first thing you're hearing is that it's going to be the Toy Story Playland will be the first thing that comes over to that new Pixar area. Mm. And for those who are unaware of what that is, that's basically sort of your kiddie rides that you see at amusement park. They're just sort of themed to.
It's Dino Land.
It's essentially Dinoland, correct?
Uh-huh.
Except Toy Story. The idea is you're in Andy's, you know, backyard, and everything's like huge, like Tinker Toy sets that are huge, you know.
Right, but it's just Dinoland.
It's essentially Dinoland type style rides.
Or I should say Dinorama.
Yeah, Dinorama. It does make some sort of sense, because if they're going to close all this area down, and then they're going to close, you know, some of the stuff on the other side of the park, like Indiana Jones or whatnot, to make room for a Star Wars land, you're going to want some attractions, and this will at least give you three easy attractions right off the bat.
Yep.
Yeah, cheap and easy to put up right away.
Sure.
So I suspect they'll put this up, but that'll be followed by, you know, whatever, another dark ride with a Monsters, Inc. roller coaster or whatever it is, or Radiator Springs Racers, excuse me.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is that they're planning eventually, this will sort of give them, you know, a little, you know, breathing room in terms of capacity.
And it's going to take, and then when they're done doing all these other things, it's just going to be wasted space that of off the shelf carny rides that nobody's going to go to.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
so it's short sighted and silly as usual. But it plugs a gap, which is what we do now. we plug gaps.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in fairness, this park needs has a lot of gaps to plug.
You're right. Exactly right.
Okay. I mean, if they were going to do this in Epcot, I think there would be a lot. Be like, what are you talking about? Or even you know.
It sounds like a cute idea. It's perfectly fine. I have nothing bad to say about Dinorama. I won't have anything bad to say about this. So it is what it is. You want to, but you know, it's nothing spectacular. And like you're saying, it's not what this studio needs. It's not going to help the studio at all.
But if it's only a small part to the overall plan, like if this is going to be followed by a major E attraction and a dark ride or whatnot, then that's fine. Whatever. That's fine.
And the whole concept of Pixar Place having a sign being a place that has nothing but one ride is a little silly, so it'd be nice to add other things to that,
right,
and expand on that idea. And there's so many things that need to go away at the Hollywood studios now, it's not even, you know.
Yeah, and the Backlot Tour was one of them.
Yeah, the Backlot Tour was one of them, and the other one that they just closed recently, the
American Idol.
The American Idol, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of stuff on the list of things that need to go. You know, we didn't mention the American Idol thing, but I found it funny that of all the things that I can think of in Disney that need to be closed, and there's a list of a lot of things that are outdated and need to be fixed or closed, you know, and not just, you know, Lights, Motor, Action. There's, you know,
yeah, sure.
Ellen's Energy Adventure. The
Beauty and the Beast stage show needs a refurb of some type.
Right.
Redo.
The Figment. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to. They just built American Idol.
Well, I mean, it was in a theater that was there from the beginning. It was other things for a while. Well, that's because they smartly, as you know, they waited to build the American Idol thing until the show was pretty much over with.
Yeah, and then
nobody watches it anymore.
So it was exactly what everybody knew was going to happen. So
it's like 4 years from now, building a Walking Dead ride.
You know what I mean? Exactly. So we have anything else left in the world news? We must. I can think of one myself.
One more minor story, Dave, and that is we got confirmation that what is replacing the mildly entertaining, somewhat popular off-kilter is now going to be the thrilling Lumberjack Show is coming, and it's the Paul Bunyan Lumberjack Show, which will start on October 5th, although I can only assume they're not going to call it the Paul Bunyan Lumberjack Show.
No, they're not.
That is the company, for lack of a better term, that is putting on the show.
Which has done things, apparently, for ESPN and other things like that. Really, the story here is, and honestly, the biggest actual story to take place in a Disney park over the last couple of weeks was the final performance of Off Kilter, because they jammed the place full of people. I mean, if you go and see the video of them playing, and because WDW Magic actually posted a great video of the entire show, of the final night performance that they played, you cannot see how anybody was getting through this. They had to put down lines, a masking tape, and have all these cast members standing out there holding a path open, which is basically just one person moving in each direction, a single file line moving in each direction. There were people as far as the Rosencrown standing on park benches all the way back there. People as all the way down the other way. Any place you could see them and where they could hear you, There was people there, hundreds and hundreds of people just packed in front of that stage to see Off Kilter play. If you're a fan of them like I was, it was moving to watch. I mean, I wish I was there. You know, it finally, you know, it's the one thing that makes me think, because I'll tell you, you know, you and people of your opinion on Off Kilter kind of had me thinking for the last couple months. I mean, are they really not that? I mean, do people really not like them? Well, that proved to me that you guys are all full of crap. I mean, they were fantastically popular. People loved them. And that, think about it, they only got a month notice. So that's just locals that are there.
Yeah.
You know, imagine the other thousands of people that weren't able to come there, you know, and weren't able to see them. And they were just, I mean, it was incredible to watch. I think Disney didn't cover themselves in glory during this. They sent up a uniform security guard to tell the guys to stop playing. That was really unnecessary. It was really kind of silly. I mean, it wasn't intended bad. The you know, the guys in the band were laughing at it, but they did. A uniform security guard walks across the stage and gives the cutoff sign, you know, like under the throat thing.
Oh, that's smart.
I mean, it was so silly. And you know what, Mike? The thing that bugs me so much, and maybe I'm going to get, I don't want to get off on a tangent on this, but and I'm really not going to, is because I've said everything I need to say about Off Kilter. We've been through this 100 times, but The way people on Twitter and social media immediately assume that Disney has the best intentions or that people were wrong, like the way people just assume something, like I can't tell. I had top people in the field of Disney coverage, the biggest people you can think of. I won't name names, Lumangello, saying on their shows publicly, well, the band might have just wanted to move on. Like, why do these people assume stuff like, first of all, Mike, think of the...
I don't know if Lou Mangiello is just an apologist for
Yeah,
Disney.
But I mean,
he's
just
terrible.
Think of the stupidity in that remark from... all four of these acts, all at the same time, got together in a room and said, you know what, guys, maybe we're creatively done with this and we want to move on. It's such a mind-numbingly silly thing to assume, and you're only doing it because you're making an assumption. Folks, the days of Disney caring only about the guest are long gone. Those days don't exist anymore. It's a conglomeration with a lot of people making a lot of decisions, not all of them good. You know, the guy at the top isn't running it anymore. Walt isn't there. You know, there are people making these decisions all over the place. Bob Iger didn't throw out Off Kilter. Some person who you never heard of until last week threw out Off Kilter. You know, and people just assume the best. I had all these people telling me, oh, well, you know, the security guard really meant goodbye. They were shaking hands. It doesn't matter what he meant. It matters what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I am no fan of Off Kilter, but I certainly don't think that they just thought, let's wrap it up. 17 years is good, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, clearly they were just let go.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I'm not against that decision, but Lou Mangiello doesn't surprise me because, you know, I mean, his ridiculous, you know, defense of the Frozen turning into Maelstrom,
that was crazy.
Completely. I mean, in March of this year, he said, you know, Frozen doesn't fit. It's not Norway. It should be, you know, that's not a,
and then
Norway's a real country. This is not.
Right.
And then, completely, once that's announced by Disney, says, well, you know, Frozen's based on Norway, so it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
I mean, it was amazing to listen to.
I mean, it's just, I mean, how do you even, like, listen to people like that who just will just say whatever they can to defend Disney just for the sake of it?
And it was in
so
the...
So he can make his money. Make his money.
I was in the same... And listen, I don't begrudge a guy for making money. I mean, that's the way he does it. That's fine. It's when it gets to the honesty thing we start to question. It was in that same diatribe where he said this thing about Off Kilter,
right?
And that bugs me because people listen to Lou and think of him as and it's not just Lou. I don't want to, like I said, I saw
no,
this,
but he's the poster child for it.
I saw this and heard this same line in a lot of different places, a lot of high name places, and they were saying, well, maybe the band just wanted to move on. Do your darn research. Drop an email. Drop a tweet.
But Dave,
find out for sure before you assume the best. Why would we assume the best? I don't understand.
You don't even need to do research.
No.
You just have to look at the facts. Four bands or four acts all leaving on the same day.
Yeah, within the same couple of days. Right before the start of the fiscal year.
Moe Rocket was the same day as Off Kilter.
And the fiscal year is October 1st. Anybody in the business
knows
that.
You don't need to do research. You just say, all right, I guess they decided to let those guys go and try something else.
Right.
I mean, you don't need research.
So what I'm happy about is for all of you people complaining and bitching and moaning about Off Kilter because they're not Canadian and they're too loud, you are about to get a team of chainsaw wielding guys who are, by the way, Floridians. So all your boxes are ticked, boys. Have at it. Enjoy.
Well, I said when we were talking about this move that if it's this, I was not going to be happy about it. And just judging by the Facebook photos that I've tweeted, this is going to be awful. I mean, I don't want to say that without seeing it, but it just looks awful.
No, you could see it. Just look up what Mike said, the Paul Bunyan Lumberjack Show. You can find it everywhere. You know exactly what it's going to be.
There's YouTube videos and stuff on it. It just looks dreadful.
I mean, it obviously has to be at a much lower scale than some of the things they do because there's just not the space there. But within 6 months to a year, you're all going to be crying for Off Kilter to come back.
Is this going to be like the Stitcher Supersonic show in about 2 months? It's gone, and then something else is there.
They bring Off Kilter back.
I
wouldn't be surprised if they do, because I'll tell you right now, Mike, I don't think Disney was expecting that when they made the decision. I don't think they were expecting a final show with probably 1,000 people standing there watching them.
Right.
I mean, I don't think they thought that Off Kilter had that kind of... Because the other acts, Moe Rockin' and the other ones, they kind of... a lot of people came for their last show, but they kind of went quietly away. They were popular acts, but they weren't really that popular. Off Kilter had a big following of people who used to come and see them multiple times a week.
I think Disney had to know that, though.
I think we're assuming the best, and I wouldn't assume it.
I'm not assuming the best. I'm just assuming that... That they knew that Off Kilter had a bigger fan base than the other acts you're talking about. I mean, they were selling the albums there and all that kind of stuff. I have to assume that they knew Off Kilter had a bigger following.
Yes, but I don't think they expected to have the place just loaded full of people.
Oh, no, maybe not that. Maybe
and
not
to have
that.
Such an emotional outpouring for them. I mean, people, there's stories about people stopping anybody in a blue button-down shirt with a name tag they could find that day.
Yeah, don't get rid of them.
What are you doing? Can you believe this? And then like all the other apologists for Disney all saying, well, a lot of people walking around saying, what's going on? Why are they here? Well, it doesn't matter how many people don't know what Off Kilter is. We're assuming We're assuming most people don't know.
Yeah, of course.
What we don't assume is that there's going to be 1,000 people here screaming for encores,
Right.
And making them come back and do encores and stuff, and you have to get security to have them take off the stage. I mean, it was... Mike,
Why would they even do that? Who cares? If they played all night long, who cared?
I have no idea.
Weird to me.
It doesn't make
any sense.
I mean, maybe
the park closed. You got to get them out of there.
They were done. And that's another thing. Oh, well, they can't go all night long. They played their normal 25-minute set. Then they came back and did an encore.
Mm-hmm.
And then... one song. Then they came back and did another one. And Jamie even made a joke. Management's going to allow us to do like one more here, right? And so they came back and they did another sort of. They combined two songs together.
Wasn't it still light out?
It was not. It was 8:10.
Okay. Well, I could see them having to stop it by 8:30 because they got to get the people illuminations viewing and all that kind of crap. I get that.
Right.
But I mean,
they're done with the second encore. They're walking off the stage. People are going just as crazy. They're screaming for it. And as soon as they're done with the second one, the boots come on the stage.
Yeah.
The guys come on the stage. And they're joking with them. The band doesn't care. They're joking with them. They had their moment. They really did. But they certainly would have played more because they had 1,000 people there wanting them to play. And you would think that Disney would care maybe a little bit more about that than about whatever schedule they were trying to keep or whatever point they were trying to make.
What schedule?
Here's 1,000 of your guests who have paid to come in here and see this band, and the band's willing to do another one? Go ahead, do another one.
Maybe it was too loud for the dessert party going on.
It might have been too loud.
That's
probably the case, Mike. Hopefully the Lumberjacks won't be there during the dessert party.
The people who paid $89.95 for a couple of cupcakes were complaining.
Wait till they hear what they're going to get next time.
Oh, my God. I mean, I already miss Off Kilter, and I didn't even like Off Kilter. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
All right, is that it for the news?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, we're going to take another short break and come back with our little walk through the queue at Cali River Rapids on Radio Harambe.
I'm Explorer Mickey, and like most kids, I love zebras, and some of the coolest are the Grevy Zebra. But if things don't change soon, there won't be any left in the wild. The Grevy Zebra Trust is doing everything they can to help keep them from extinction. But there are only a couple of thousand left, so we have to work fast. Go to their website, GrevyZebraTrust.org, and donate anything you can. Even a small donation will help keep the Grevy Zebra alive for us kids and the future generations to enjoy.
Welcome back once again to Radio Harambe, and for our feature section, we're going to talk a little bit about Cali River Rapids. And Cali River Rapids opened up with the rest of the Asia section less than a year after the opening of the entire park, actually in March of 1999. It was originally supposed to be called the Tiger Rapids Run, but turned its name over to Cali River Rapids. It is essentially, for those who haven't been, a giant flume ride. And another one of those examples, the great examples of how Disney takes sort of an existing ride idea and turns it into a much more immersive and amazing experience. Without getting too much into the ride itself, which we'll save for another day, that sort of difference between your regular flume ride and your regular raft ride and and this particular ride begins right as you enter the door, where you have, Mike, I think you would call this one of the best queues in any Disney property. Probably one of the few areas where the queue may actually be better than the ride itself.
I think a lot of people who I think Cali River Rapids gets a bad rap to some people. Not a lot of people like it. It's, you know, it is a raft ride, and it's really not all that thrilling, and it's relatively short.
I like it. It's fun.
I like it, too. I do enjoy it. I know Brooke's one of her favorite rides, if not her favorite ride.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
I do, too, but it gets, you know, a lot of people are not huge fans of the ride. Everybody agrees, I think, that the queue is, like, one of the more detailed, like many of the queues at the Animal Kingdom, are one of the more detailed storytelling queues there are.
I would absolutely agree. So let's begin. What do you want to do? You want to do it like a walkthrough style? Go right straight from the beginning on all the way in?
That's what I was planning on, Dave, because I know when we did our walkthroughs of the Maharaja Jungle Trek and our walkthrough of Harambe, I know people actually listen to our show as they walk them. So sort of give them a kind of a view of the park, and they can listen to what we, you know, tell them as to what's going on there.
Right.
So why don't we do that?
Okay.
And I'll just take over right now. It actually starts before you queue up. The FastPass Plus machine, well, it's the old FastPass machine, is right outside of the queue. And it's built, it's actually a building on stilts. And this is Manesh Gurunga's home. You know, that person will come into play later. She's actually the owner and operator of the Kali River Expeditions, which is the fictitious company that leads the Kali River Rapids, you know, expedition tours. Now, you'll notice in this hut, sort of, it's built on stilts because the Chacranada, which is the river that you'll be riding on, and the sort of the river of the area, which means rivers that flow in a circle, and that floods during the summer. And this is supposed to be the summertime. Right next, right across from there, is the Gibbon exhibit, which is all flooded, and you can actually see that there are doors into these old ruins, and the water comes up past the doors. That's because it's flood season, and the snow is melting from the Himalayan mountains, which are, of course, not that far away, and it's created this sort of situation here. You'll also notice that the home, even though this is one of the more well-to-do people of the town of Anandapur, is, you know, kind of ramshackly, for lack of a better word. They use old shirts for curtains, but right next on the ground is all sorts of packs for rafting equipment and all that kind of stuff. Sort of give you the feel that you're about to get into this queue and start heading towards the Kali River Rapids. Once you get into the queue itself, you start walking on a path. And Dave, you're probably familiar with this path where it's actually kind of long and winding, and you pass over, you know, through the bamboo forest a little bit. You'll notice, you know, ruins a little bit, you know, some religious relics and stuff like that are kind of broken along the side of the trail. And at certain points, you'll actually see old brick kind of walkway that kind of leads you to believe that this area was actually a little bit more populated than it is now. It's now just sort of laying in ruins. And you actually walk over the river and the Kali River Rapids attraction at one point in time when you go over this sort of stone bridge-like thing. The first building you enter is the Tiger Temple. Now, you'll notice right in front of you there onto the left-hand side, there'll be sort of this wall that has all these ribbons and all these bells. I don't know, Dave, do you know what the ribbons and bells stand for or symbolize?
Not in the least. I know exactly what you're talking about, too.
Yes. So the ribbons are actually, these are people who pass by when they say a prayer. They put up a ribbon.
That's usually what this is. I mean, that was going to be my guess, but I didn't really know. I think about, like, the things that you turn, you know, the...
Correct.
You know, go ahead. Don't let me interrupt. Keep going.
No, that's fine. And there are also bells hanging here. Those are when people, when their prayers get answered, they come back and they put a bell up. So that symbolizes, you know, somebody who, you know, whatever they were praying for comes true, they'll go up and put a bell there. And you'll notice, like, a lot of it, like the ribbons and bells are very kind of old looking. And cast members actually have just sort of let them sit there for the past 15 to 20 years to make them look like they've been sitting there forever.
Right.
And every once in a while, they actually put a new one up, just like you would in a real temple like this. So there will be a couple of, like, newer looking ones mixed in with the old looking ones. Once you're inside the Tiger Temple. And this is sort of the religious center of Anandapur. And what most people don't even realize is that the queue itself, you are walking the town of Anandapur. This is the city of, or the village of Anandapur. And this is the temple. And it is called the Tiger Temple because, as you know, people who have gone through this queue, they know there's this big statue of this dark tiger. It sort of looks like a cat, but it's really, it's vicious looking in the front. It's tiger. Tigers are the guardian spirits of the, you know, sort of this sort of area.
Right.
Much of the symbolism and much of the stuff that they use here are both Hindu and Buddhist in nature because they didn't want to just use a Hindu kind of ideal to the area because then, you know, they didn't want to just do one religion. So they kind of mix and mingle some of the sort of iconic look of both Hindu and Buddhism, which of course is the most prevalent religions of the area.
Right.
Now, other stuff in this area that you'll see, the Tiger Temple, they're right outside of it. And Dave, you might recall these. There's these sort of statues that are all in a row. And they, you know, the ones behind actually look like they're buried in dirt. That is sort of showing you, and it's such a great way of doing this. But for people who don't know, when you cut down the rainforest, one of the problems that happens is, you know, there's a lot of rain. And what the trees do, they prevent landslides. Well, with all the, you know, cutting of the forest in this general area, it created a landslide not that long ago, which has buried some of the statues. Only the one that's closest to the actual temple itself is sort of free of being buried. You know, the tiger is obviously a force of nature, and the people of Anandapur, as you would think for being in the animal kingdom, are very nature specific. They're very into the natural gods. Another one that you'll see here, there's actually a statue of a cobra, and that is a naga, which is the protector of nature. And you'll see people have left all sorts of, like, what's the word I'm looking for? The offerings.
Yeah, there's like, I think, a fruit basket there and things like that. Yeah.
Right. There's all sorts of offerings.
It's and a also, fountain, pretty much, right?
Correct. There's also a carving of a mahogany that has 11 different animals on them, and that's the 11 animals that are sacred to the people of Anandapur. You see that when you first actually get in.
Uh-huh.
One other thing in this area, well, a couple other things in this area, many people recall the giant costumes that are very freaky looking. There's the almost demonic looking costume. And these are actually taken from Bali, where these costumes are used in religious ceremonies.
Yeah, there's one that looks like it's a head from a headhunter or something.
Yes,
like.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. And then there are cages also in the back that are supposedly have all sorts of religious items.
Right.
And these items will be taken out of the cages for various ceremonies and stuff, but they're locked up for the monks to protect them. Mm-hmm. Now, as you walk around this area, as you sort of leave this temple and start heading to others, you'll notice all these like bicycles and like street vendors, and those are the people who are supposed to be plying their wares here along the streets of Anandapur, selling it to either tourists or the monks from the temple or the people of the village. And Disney Imagineers actually went to Asia and bought all this stuff. All of this stuff was purchased from actual street vendors. There's actually over 5,000 props in the queue itself.
It's amazing.
Some of them, they actually went up to a couple of street vendors and just bought everything that he owned. His bike, even the chair that he was sitting in to sell his stuff. They just took it all. and apparently, it was probably made his year. But, literally bought everything he had. And they brought it here and they set it up to make it look very authentic, like a Southeast Asian or Indian type of street vendors. The next building that you enter into is actually one that I commented on the blog this past week, and that is the Painted Pavilion. It doesn't look like much when you're at the bottom, but if you look up, the whole ceiling is all these murals that are taken from the Jakarta Tales, which is a group of Indian folk tales. There's actually about 500 of them. Some of them as old as 5,000 years old. And they used different ones that were, told a story of nature. There was one about the Banyan deer, which tells the story of a deer that, with a human king, he sacrifices his life to teach the human king the value of life.
Right.
There's another one that the brave lion and the fearless lion and the brave elephant, I think. That tells the story of this lion and the elephant. They heard that these merchants being attacked by like sort of demonic creatures, and they saved them. And then the people revered the lion and the elephant from there on out. And there's there's a total of 7 different stories told, each in a different panel on the ceiling. It is really beautiful to look at it. And where the Tiger Temple is sort of the religious center of Anandapur, this is actually the cultural center of Anandapur. What you have here, and why it's kind of wide open, there's nothing going on here. This is where poets would come and read their poems. Musicians come to play, almost every night, and the people of the village would come and listen to them and, give them money and stuff like that as they played. Storytellers would come to tell stories. All this kind of stuff was done here at the Painted Pavilion. Before we move on to our next sort of building, Dave, do you know what the word Kali means?
Do I know what the word Kali means?
Yes.
I assume you mean beyond... it's not a river. I don't know.
It is actually, and you'll see a picture of it, I think, in
Kali,
the...
Because it's a Kali Rapids expedition.
It's a Hindu god.
Okay.
It is a multi-armed Hindu god. So if you'll see a picture of one.
Oh, yeah, you see that.
Right, it's like this bluish woman almost with all these arms. And she is the sort of the goddess of the destructive force of nature. So you sort of get an idea as to why they named the attraction the Kali River Rapids.
That's amazing.
There's a lot of detail here, Dave. There's a lot of signs all over the town. Many of them are the same as you see sort of by the Yak and Yeti restaurant, or even in the Maharaja Jungle Trek. One that you see several times is talking about an upcoming rally to stop the TTAC Lumber Company, which is using slash and burn tactics to, clear the rainforest. Mm-hmm. And you'll see there's going to be a rally at the Atavika Station number 12, which, of course, for people who remember our Maharaja Jungle Trek episode, is the Bat House, is where sort of this area where people were going to go meet to have this rally to stop this company. There are other things like this. My personal favorite is, I think it's called the X Hotel, which I think it's EKT. And it has like this sort of, it's just painted on the side of one of the walls of the building. And it's an advertisement for a hotel. And some of the funny things it says is it has a nice view, cheap prices. Some rooms have windows. I'm not sure. I've never heard of a hotel that didn't have windows in every room.
Yeah.
There's a bathroom with running water on both floors. That's an advertisement in there. And if you pay a little bit extra money, you will get a mattress and toilet paper. I thought that was it's a fabulous sign that you'll see on one of the walls as you walk this area.
There's also ones for like souvenir shops and
there's a money changer right by the bird market. And the bird market, you'll see there's one area that has all these cages for birds. And this is a common thing in Asia, in this part of Asia, where they sell local birds to people as pets. Obviously, Disney did not want to put actual birds in these little cages because that would be, you know, wouldn't really fit in with the idea behind having a zoo. But they do have all of these empty cages to sort of, you know, sort of bring that to life. And not far from there, there's actually an aviary that has a couple of live birds. It's one of the few queues that actually has, live animals in right. the queue itself. I mean, it has, I believe it was a kingfisher of some type. I don't remember what kind. I think a bluebird also as well. But actually, I have it right here written down. Black-collared starling and a white-throated kingfisher. If I just looked at my notes, Dave, I would have been able to give you that. But that's what's there in the actual aviary itself. If you have a chance, you can watch those birds for a little bit. And I think, to be honest, I think Disney should do more of that. But we could talk about that at another day.
Yeah.
The next thing is Mr. Panika's shop. Mr. Panika sells antiques, although he spells it A-N-T-I-K-S. And he, actually, there's a funny sign here. It says antiques made to order, which I found funny. This is sort of the biggest shop. And while you have all these little street vendors, this is actually a legit store. And when you walk in there, there's all sorts of artifacts. Again, these are all taken from Southeast Asia and India. There are all sorts of like statues and, you know, various saddles and canes and, you know, all sorts of things that you can that are for sale at Mr. Panika's. There's also a fun little desk that you'll see like family photos and things of that. You'll see Mr. Panika's license. You'll see a picture of the royal couple, which also hangs at the Yak and Yeti. And you actually, if you look up, you'll see more stuff like canoes and things like that. But also you'll see a door, and that is where Mr. Panika and his family live. And right outside from there, although you can't walk out there, but if you look out one of the windows, you'll see that he has a tricycle that's like loaded to bear with goods. Not sure if he's going somewhere to a market or if he just bought them and bringing them in. And you see like children's toys and stuff like that. So Mr. Panika has his family and they live right there in the shop.
The royal family photo is all over the place.
It is. I know it hangs in Yak and Yeti. It hangs in another store there somewhere, but it also hangs here in Mr. Panika's shop.
I think it's in Everest too, in the beginning of the queue at Everest as well.
Right. And there's all sorts of fun little things here at Mr. Panika's. Like there's a sign that says they'll ship anywhere. There's, you know, a scale for, you know, with some packaged goods on there that he's ready to ship out. He says he'll make deals with people. There's a sign that says, yeah, I'll make deal for out of towners as he's trying to elicit the tourists who are coming in for the Kali River Rapids expedition.
Right.
Last and not least, Dave, is the actual Kali River Expedition offices. And there are two that you walk through. And for people who do the Fast Pass, you actually skip some of these things that I've already talked about. Like, you go briefly through the Tiger Temple. Mm-hmm. You don't really go through the Painted Pavilion. You don't go through Mr. Panika's at all.
No.
But you do go through the offices here. They do hook you up here at the offices. So you go through the Kali River Expedition offices. And there's the first is the booking office. And here you'll see, you know, things where they're trying to elicit, you know, trying to get the people in and book them for their trip. There's a chalkboard here that has the different rafts and where they currently are. A lot of them have, one of them actually has an homage to the Jungle Book. It's Baloo Me Later, I think is the name of the boat. And then there are other boats that have references to real rivers in Asia and China and all that kind of stuff. You actually have also here a map of Anandapur. You have also a slideshow that shows Manisha Gurung, who is the owner and operator of Kali River Expeditions. And this is a funny little story, actually. You hear her voice, and that's actually an actress. But the photograph of the woman who is supposed to be Manisha Gurung was actually a security person who was working at the Maharaja Jungle Trek. And During her time there, she would pass the time. And one part of the Maharaja Jungle Trek, there's a lot of newspapers painted, you know, basically plastered to the wall. And she noticed some very untoward, you know, sort of adult-oriented articles in some of the, and she pointed it out to the to Disney staff, who quickly, of course, took them down. They didn't want anybody who actually knew the language to read it. And as a reward for that, they made her Manisha Gurung, and she is the security officer or whatever, is the woman who portrays Manisha in these, in this slideshow. But it is not the same woman who actually, it's not the same person who does the voice. The last office is sort of the more of the working office, and this is where the people are really sort of booking things, and the people who work here, you know, are have their stuff. One thing I forgot to mention about the booking office, the first office, is you'll see a lot of paddles,
yep,
with a lot of graffiti on them. And that is actually all the cast members who work there will sign their name and whatnot to a paddle. The upper right-hand corner of the paddle is actually signed by all the Imagineers who worked on this attraction.
Oh, really?
So if you go there, take a look. It's in the upper right-hand corner. It's that paddle that has all the Imagineers who have signed it.
I will look for that.
Other things, like other little knickknacks here, you'll see, you know, there's the first 100 rupee note that the Kali River expeditions ever made is put up on the wall. Very similar to the first dollar bill that Chester and Hester made.
Yeah, they also this is an Expedition Everest, too.
Yeah, right, exactly. One day we'll have to do that one, too. That's you.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like a teapot that's going off. There's also, if you listen carefully, there's a radio. And you'll hear warnings that, you know, lumber, you know, there's illegal, you know, lumbering going on near where you are. It's like a warning. There's like a radio signal from somebody trying to get in touch with the people from the Kali River expeditions to tell them that, you know, there's, you know, the problem up the river.
Right.
Which, of course, you know.
Is where you're headed.
Unfortunately, you'll see a sign that says the agent is out at temple currently, so there's nobody there to receive this this warning.
Excellent.
But you're almost on your way, and that, Dave, is the cue to Kali River Expeditions.
Where is the paintings with the names of the boats on them? There's like, I think my favorite one was like the Sherpa Surfer.
That's the working office. That's the last office.
Yeah, there's the like Monsoon Mama. Or
something. Right. Those, that's the paintings that shows you all the boats. And those boats are also listed on the chalkboard in the booking office.
Right.
And you can see where they are along the river and along the Kali River Expedition. So those same boats that are listed on the chalkboard, all of them are painted in the next office.
And there's like stuff upstairs, you know, above you. And a lot of it is like things like life rings and first aid kits and stuff like that as well. What I like about it is the continuity really between it and what I kept mentioning, which was Expedition Everest. I mean, they both use the same sort of template for, you know, how to build the story up to the payoff, which was the ride itself. You know, a lot of this stuff is missed on people, and it's a big shame that it is. But it really isn't at the same time, because it does. I mean, it sets such an enormously deep and wonderful scene. You know, it's incredible what it does, really. And I remember being in there where Mike was talking about the bird cages that don't have birds in them, and somebody asking the cast member where'd the birds go. Like, how come the birds aren't in here? You know, are they okay? Where'd they go?
What did the cast members say, do you know?
Oh, they're fine. They're just out. They'll be back soon, is what she said.
Yeah. It's really an amazing cue. And I don't even think people realize that you're actually supposed to be walking through the village of Anandapur. This is Anandapur here.
Right.
Which is merely the cue of Kali River Rapids. And, you know, just the different buildings that you go through, the shops. It's Mr. Panika's, and especially, I think, the booking and working offices really are just packed full of little things like first aid kits and little signs here and there about, you know, whatever. There's books on the shelf that are sort of cue you in that, you know, there's something going wrong in this area of Anandapur, the stuff about logging and stuff like that. You even, there's even little touches like when you are by the Tiger Temple, where the those statues are buried under sand, under dirt from a landslide. If you listen closely, you can hear chainsaws in the very deep in the background. Obviously not close, but not that far away. So little touches like that are really what make this queue so tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, Expedition Everest, again, is that's Sirkazon. That's what you're going through.
Right.
And the same goes here. I mean, obviously, there's more to Anandapur because there are other buildings that are supposedly part of it that aren't just in here. But, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, the tiny little knickknacks and stuff that are there. You know, teapots and radios and,
right.
And you know, all sorts of stuff. Drawings on a draft table, you know, or a map, I mean, on a draft table.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. It's you know, it's the shame about it is, you know, just like with Everest, is people just fly through it.
Sure. I mean, and you know, the other thing is the working office compared to the booking office. You can see, like, the working office has, like, a bunch of pamphlets for the right. area and the area that you can pick up if you
right.
want. Well, that you can, but... you know, that are supposed to be there for the guests. I do know that, you know, people blow through it a lot of the time.
Right.
You know, they don't fully appreciate it. But I do think it gives a sense of, you know, placement.
Sure.
Like, even though you don't appreciate what, you know, Mr. Panik is, or you don't fully appreciate the, you know, the Painted Pavilion and what the stories are and why that's there and why that is where... you know, people come to play music and stuff like that.
Right.
You don't fully appreciate things like, you know, as out to temple, meaning the temple that you walked through about 20 minutes ago.
Right.
People don't realize that, but I think people get a sense overall that there's something going on here. There's a story being told.
Yeah, there's the ruins. There's the religious aspect, obviously, mm-hmm. the spiritual aspect of it. There's the story in the you know, expedition offices and
right.
and things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to miss that kind of stuff. It's hard to not soak some of it in. And I do think that they do well enough to sort of, you know, do both. You know, for the people who blow through, they get an idea of it, and just the aesthetic beauty of it.
Right.
Is what is so staggering. I mean, these little touches combined together to be just this one gorgeous collection of cultural artifacts, really.
Yeah.
And like Mike was saying, most of these are authentic. And
almost all, yeah.
Yeah, this is like a museum that you're going through of just unbelievable cultural, you know, little representations here and there.
Especially Mr. Panika's, where they yeah. have the, you know, all these statues and stuff like that. Those are really taken from Asia. They're, you know, legit statue. I mean, you know, stuff they found and bought there and brought over here to for you to see. You know,
the gorgeous Hindu statue that's mm-hmm. there. You know, that Mike was mentioning about the snake. I mean, wait till you see that if you haven't seen that before. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, there's the paintings on the walls and stuff. It's one of those things where if you sit and walk through it, you go, well, gee, good God, where did they get all this stuff from? And one of it's just more beautiful than the other. So
for our listeners who really want to go check this out, one thing you can do is very rarely is the Kali River Rapids crowded from like 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, if you do fast passes, you miss a good 2/3 of the queue.
Right.
At least the real good stuff. So go on it, like, first thing in the morning. You don't even have to ride it. You know, you could just walk through it and just, you know, politely tell the cast member you don't want to ride it. But there's usually not anybody there. You could just walk through it for 20 minutes. Another thing to do is, you know, it's crowded in August, but when it's open in February, it's generally not that crowded. So if
right.
you go there, you know, pretty much any time or even towards the end of the day, you know, you can easily walk through the queue, take some pictures, soak it in, and then just, you know, don't catch pneumonia, go and
right.
go somewhere else. But it's worth the 15-20 minutes to walk through it for sure.
Definitely. I've done that once before, and I wanted to do it again this time around because I have bought a new camera and I want to take a lot of pictures, but we were there when it was 147 degrees, so there really was never a time where there wasn't.
That's true. Yeah, it was packed every time.
Yeah. So I kind of lost out there, so maybe next time. So is that it? Are we done with our tour?
That is it. We are done with the tour.
All right, folks. Listen, thank you very much for tuning in to Radio Harambe. Let me remind you to check out JomboEveryone.com. You'll find a store there selling some great stuff, including some handmade bracelets. There's things on the Zazzle store where we got our Not a Half Day Park t-shirt. All this stuff is our effort. We've raised a few $100 already that we're all giving away to our conservation partners. You can learn about that by going to JomboEveryone.com and clicking the conservation page and learn about those partners. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave us a rating there as well. I haven't checked that in a while, so I'm not sure when the last time we got one of those was. But if you haven't done one, please do so, especially if you want to leave a positive one.
I think we've gotten one or two over the last couple of weeks, Dave.
Yeah, I don't look at that as much as I used to. I don't know why, but probably because I spend all my time editing. So, and I would like to apologize for my potty mouth in the last episode for those who heard that as well. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Radio Harambe. Mike is at Jombo Everyone. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, everything you can imagine. You can find those links at JomboEveryone.com. So, for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for tuning in to Radio Harambe. Kwa ku walukwa melako na kungulu na utuku pata melele amina kwa ku walukwa melako na kungulu na utuku.